and welcome to a very special episode of Yelling About Comics, in which we celebrate that age-old tradition holiday, Valentine's Day. Actually, we're just going to use this as an excuse to talk about our favorite couples within comic books, because there are a bunch of them to talk about, and there's also some that really suck, so I always feel like it's really good to, you know, give credit to the ones who are, in fact, awesome. As, well, not as always, but as generally, I am your host, Jen Bozier, and I'm joined this evening by Carrie Honey.
I am ready to talk some couples.
Ooh. Nothing's more romantic than comic books. I think so. Anyway.
You know, I have my favorite couple. I actually bought an extra issue of the cover that they're on and have it framed. Because, yes, I do think of, you know, comic books in love.
Well, as we said, and we'll talk about this a bit tonight, some of them, like, there have been some couples throughout the age of comic books that are just really, really great, and they stand out as being really notable. And they don't have, like, I hesitate, and I don't think either of us have, like, Superman and Lois Lane, because whenever you think of Superman, you just think of Lois Lane, right? Or Lois Lane and, like, vice versa, right? Like, that's the couple. But they've been through so many ups and downs, and no, they're together, they're not together, no, they're together again, no, they're not together. Like, there's just been so much back and forth over the years. I mean, over, like, almost 100 years at this point, give or take.
And, you know, the sad thing is about that is, I forget the actress who played Lois Lane in those 70s, 80s movies.
Margot Kidder?
Yeah. I don't think it's the actress, but how they played her in that movie really killed any fondness I would have for Lois Lane.
There's actually a very large group of fans who really, really hate Margot Kidder as Lois Lane. She, at the time, I don't think she got so much flack at the time, but her portrayal of Lois Lane has not aged well. Time has not been good to that particular pairing.
And I mean, at the same time, like, I mean, you have to admire Lois Lane because at the time Superman was created and Lois Lane was created, I mean, that was a very forward thinking character, you know.
Yeah, very much so.
Pushy, aggressive woman who was, you know, trying to succeed at, you know, being a reporter. And I can't fault Margot Kidder for how she played it, because, you know, she's doing as the script goes and
right
and how the director has it. But I don't know, it's just what really killed me was the Eiffel Tower scene.
Oh yeah, no, that one was not, it just, there's just been a lot of stuff that hasn't been great to comics over the years, and it makes it. And we're not going to, I mean, some of the comics, the couples that we're talking about tonight have had their ups and downs as well. But I think that the people that we're talking about tonight, by and large, are ones who have kind of persisted and really stood out to us for one reason or another. And I will, because you have, I think, one of the most tumultuous relationships in comics with your favorite, the people who are framed, which is still like one of my favorite things at your house. Would you like to lead us off with Gambit and Rogue?
Yes, I will. So, I know I've said this before, but I first discovered X-Men comics thanks to the 90s X-Men cartoon that was on when I was in high school. That was like, as soon as I sat in front of this cartoon, first time I saw it, I was just like, whoa, this is the best thing I've ever seen. Oh my God. And so I just would watch it religiously. Like, I had my VCR set so I could record all the episodes. And you know, Gambit and Rogue were a couple in that. And the first time I really got to see it was when it was the arc where they were all kidnapped into the Savage Land. Sauron got Morph to bring them all to the Savage Land. Anyway, they took all their powers. And it was one of the few first episodes that I saw. So I saw, you know, Magneto and Professor X together. I was like, well, they're buddies. I didn't know that they were, you know, also, you know, frenemies, I guess, until I saw other episodes. But you know, when they all lost their powers, it was like, you know, Gambit made this big deal about telling Rogue that he loved her and they kissed. And I didn't see what the big deal to that was. And so I saw a few episodes later and realized that her power was she absorbs people. She's like a pod person. And, So that's why they were never able to do anything. And so when I really got into the comics, and I saw how he was constantly flirting with her. And she was just like, no, it's because she just didn't want to risk loving him. And so the comic issue that I have framed is comic issue number 24. And it's of Gambit and Rogue, like, in each other's arms. And, of course, she's fully in her spandex and gloves. So, you know, there's no touching. But anyway, that issue had a date where they actually go out on a date. And he even tells her, like, they even, like, it's clearly like a horse ride carriage and all that. And he's telling her in the carriage that he's willing to risk, you know, getting hurt if it means, you know, being able to touch her. And she won't allow it. She just does not want to have that risk. And so, you know, it's a really, to me, it was a really cool way, especially for someone in high school, to see a relationship that wasn't founded on physical. You know, they could be together and love each other, and it didn't, you know, obviously there was no kissing, no sex, you know, because none of that could happen. Not that they didn't want to, but they still found a way. I mean, and really, Gambit could have, he was a player. I mean, he could have had anybody he wanted.
Indeed.
Yeah, but he, you know, wanted to be faithful and stick with her, and they were together for a long time, and then, something with Sabretooth and Gambit's past, and I don't know, but I've read some
his
of
ex-wife.
Yeah, well, gosh, Belladonna. Anyway, and but I found some like later issues before that series, the comic, the X-Men comic, just that name X-Men before it, Marvel closed it, where they are together again, and but Gambit's been blinded. And so she's kind of like his crutch for things. And there's this really sad arc where she leaves him to go do something. She has to go on this mission. And he's like, oh, I'll be fine. I don't think she even told him. And he realized it when she hadn't come around. And he's like, whatever, I'm Gambit. I can find my way around. So he's a smooth talker. So he hitchhikes like all the way to where she is just by randomly talking to people. And like, man, he said that's probably one of it. He said that's one of his hidden mutant abilities, is the way to sweet talk people and get whatever he wants. But Rogue has found someone that she's able to touch, and she lets herself have this moment where she's like kind of letting herself go to this person, and strictly because she can't believe that she can be touched. And of course, that is when Gambit walks in. Yes, he's blind, but doesn't mean he can't sense stuff going on in the room. But, you know, so she explains herself, and they do patch things up, and I don't know what's happened to them since. I know that they're broken up now, but the reason why that I got into the Uncanny Avengers at all was because they were on the cover in each other's arms again. I was like, oh my gosh, they're back together. Just to find out that wasn't even him. It was Red Skull, who's using Professor X's brain to, you know, mask who he was. And so when Rogue saw Gambit later, and she was like, didn't we just talk? And he's like, oh, did you miss me that much? You're imagining me? And so she realized that it wasn't him at all.
Right.
So they're not together now. I still hope that one day.
They've been one of those tumultuous characters where Marvel's constantly, they're together, they're not together, they're together, they're not together. But that idea of them as a couple, they keep coming back to it. And I think it's because fans just, they love them, right? Like, even I have a soft spot for Gambit and Rogue. Like, when I see them together, I'm always like, I love you guys.
Well, I mean, Rogue to me has always, that character has always spoken to me. I mean, initially it was her hair, because let's face it, the hair is badass.
The hair is amazing.
But when, you know, I started to get to know her and just saw, like, yes, she has this huge she's invulnerable because she stole Ms. Marvel's abilities. But she also is extremely vulnerable because she can't touch anybody. And
she's very isolated.
Yes. And but the same, like, how she's able to power through that, and she's still like a really strong character. She's so strong, she broke away from her adopted mother, Mystique, and, you know, took some risks, and she's always been able to forge out on her own. And especially since she joined the Uncanny Avengers in 2012, and that's been one of the best things she's ever done, because she's really kind of come out in her own. She's not, you know, behind Professor X, she's not doing this, she's not leaning on Gambit. And Gambit, I've always liked, just because, well, how can you not? Between the accent, His ability is kind of cool. Whether you think flinging cards is stupid or not, it's still a really cool ability.
It is.
And that his outfit in the 90s, I mean, I don't know what it is about the weird art, like the weird, like, you know, armor and the trench coat, but it works. Totally works.
I was thinking that Pete Holmes, though. What's with the gloves? Go finger. Cats is returning to Broadway.
Like the gloves that are just on the, they just cover the middle two fingers. And well, I guess that's how he grips the cards. I don't know.
I guess. Well, they're undeniably cool looking, though, right? I mean, yeah. Come on.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
so like,
I guess it's, you know, kind of like, you're going to ask Tetsuya Nomura about his belt buckles. I mean, they provide no function either, but hey, let's just cover
right.
characters.
Well, let's just have all of them.
Also, you got to love Gambit's black eyes with red
with
irises.
The red.
Yeah.
It is really cool looking.
Which just goes great with Rogue's red hair.
It does. See, they're meant to be together, fashionably.
They look good together, and they happen to be awesome people. It's a win-win.
Exactly. Everybody wins in the situation. So that's your, I think that's kind of your on-again, off-again, somewhat tragic romance. And
I just want them to be together.
I know, right? I have an equally tragic on-again, off-again one, which is Swamp Thing and Abby Arcane.
I predicted this one as well as you predicted mine. Yep.
Yep, they are, in fact, one of the pieces of art. If last year at Denver Comic Con, the artist for the reboot of Swamp Thing, the new 52 Swamp Thing, was there. Yannick was there, and Paquette, and he didn't have the piece that I want, and it's where Swamp Thing and Abby Arcane, they kiss, and, well, let's explain this first. So, the reason I've loved Abby Arcane and Swamp Thing ever since the 80s with Alan Moore's original run, because I guess I have a thing for tragic romances, and in the 80s, they kind of hinted that Swamp Thing's the avatar of the green, which is everything alive and growth and life, and Abby Arcane, they revealed this in the New 52, but they hinted in the 80s that she was deeply connected to the rot, which is death and decay, and so in the 80s, they couldn't really be together because Swamp Thing is really, he's pretty much just sentient plant matter, right? Like he has a brain that he absorbed, but he's really made of plant matter. So kind of like Rogue and Gambit, theirs wasn't really a physical relationship. They just very much loved one another. Mm-hmm. And there is, because it's Alan Moore, they do have sex once in the 80s. And he, like, grows a piece of fruit off of himself and feeds it to her, and they have, like, the psychic connection that is like, it's like that, it's kind of like that physical connection, but not quite, but, so they had that in the 80s, and then in the New 52, they definitely establish her as the avatar of Rot, and obviously you cannot have those two together, right? So there's this panel that I've always wanted where they're kissing one another, and, you can see, like, the leaf. There's a leaf behind him that's catching fire because she kills everything she touches and he tries to make it. So they're total opposites. Mm-hmm. And they can't be together. But their relationship is always this, you know, they came together and they just love one another. It's not, even though they kind of off again, they gave them a good reason that they can't be together. Not like, oh, today I've just decided that I don't like you. There's been a misunderstanding. Like, they gave them a very real reason they can't be together. And so they have always been one of my favorites. There's an 80s panel, too, at which they're hugging each other, and they're in the swamp, and there's just all these flowers around them and all these things. And I think Abby Arcane's topless, but her back is turned to the mm-hmm. camera. So, you know, see her from the back, but they're hugging each other, and I love that panel, too. Like, they're just, for some reason, they're one of my favorite characters. I love that concept of this avatar of life and this avatar of death finding one another.
Oh, that is cool.
Right? It just, and there's a very sad scene when they first realize that, oh, we're both these avatars, and the avatar of the green is kind of seeing, the other avatars of the green, the previous ones, are sitting around Swamp Thing, and they're like, you know she can't be here, right? And he's kind of like, yeah, I know. And even Abby's like, yeah, I know. And it killed me. I was reading it on the train years ago, going to my job, and I just started crying on the train. It's like, oh my God, they can't be together. And people are just looking at me, and I'm like, shoo. So I think, and I was reading on my phone, so I'm sure it looked like I was getting like horrible news on via text or something. So I was just sitting there like, oh my God, on my phone. It's very, very tragic. But they're one of my
That's
favorite couples.
hilarious. I bet people are like, oh my God, there's this girl on the train. I think like her dad died or something.
Oh yeah, it wasn't like, it wasn't one of those things either where you get the tear and you're like, oh, sniffle, moving on with my life. Like I actually had like tears coming down my face. So I was like, it was terrible. And so something I think is really funny, when we came up with our favorite couples separately. We both have Teen Titans on our list, which I find
Just
very funny.
completely different characters.
Yes, we have different characters, but we both gravitated towards Teen Titans.
Well, mainly because once again, the cartoon from the 90s was awesome.
Oh my God, it was so good.
This
So,
90s cartoons were just amazing. What
God, they
can I
really
say?
hit it out of the park. Thanks, Disney. So, well, no, that's why, because Disney decided that they wanted to get into the Saturday afternoon or the afternoon after school comic game and the Saturday morning comic games, and so they came out with DuckTales, right? Great animation quality, great voice acting, great music. And then everybody else was like, oh shit. Because if you remember in the 80s, like we had good stuff like Transformers and G.I. Joe, but
Oh, yeah.
it was predominantly dominated by Hanna-Barbera, right? Which, and the Hanna-Barbera shit, the animation quality is
Was
terrible. And it
Transformers
was.
Hanna-Barbera?
Hasbro.
Oh, okay. Yes, I'm.
And they. But that. That I mean, that wasn't. I think it was FHE, was the animation company there. And, but they, it was all copy pastes, right? You had Jabberjaw, you had the Snorks, you had the Smurfs, you had the Pawpaw Bears, you had Scooby-Doo. Like, it was all just variations on a theme,
Okay,
right?
Snorks was awesome.
It was just the Smurfs put underwater.
It was better than the Smurfs because they were underwater.
Carrie. So then you had Disney came out and they were like, nope, we're going to step up this game. And then suddenly everybody was like, oh shit, we got to compete with this. So you had this just string of amazing animation and amazing TV shows that had these great theme songs, right?
Like
But yes, the.
Batman the animated series.
Oh, Jesus. Those guys just like came in and they were like, this is cute and all, but gauntlet. Like, stand back, let the adults in. And so, yes, you had. So. Yours, I'll do mine really quick because mine's not actually an established. They kind of flirted with it in the comics, flirted, but they ultimately
They had a
decided
fling.
against it.
They
They
had a
had a
fling in the
fling.
comic. Yeah, but who
But
did
my
Raven not have a fling
favorite,
with?
right, my favorite Teen Titans were Raven and Beast Boy. And I loved it because Raven was this dark, serious character who was really trying to find herself. And she's By nature, she's a very violent, angry person, right? And she's trying to be this very peaceful, good character. And then you had Beast Boy, who was just this lovable, sweet, good-natured guy who was funny, like he liked to laugh, right? And he was inherently just good. And he was also inherently fairly peaceful. I mean, they made jokes a lot about him being a vegetarian because he's been most of the animals, right? But like that's the type of character he was. And I loved them together because it was this idea that they would balance each other out, right?
Right.
And I love them. Whenever they flirt or whenever Beast Boy like makes a comment about liking Raven, it just like my little heart flutters. Like, ooh, I love you guys. You, on the other hand, actually have a character, a couple that we talked about on this very podcast, as a matter of fact. Who is your favorite? And that's Robin and Nightwing. I'm drinking wine. Robin and
It
Starfire.
could be Robin and Nightwing. I
They're never in the same room together. Anyways. Dun dun dun.
That is
Robin
true.
and Starfire.
Yes, because again, like this did start once again from the cartoon, Teen Titans from the 90s, and I do enjoy Teen Titans Go. I know people they don't think that's cool because it's called a bastardization of our childhood, but it's funny, damn it.
It
And
is.
one thing I really like about it is that they kind of turned the tables on it, because in the show, like Starfire was very much very toward Robin, and he kept a cool head. He just didn't want to let his emotions show because he's got to be cool. But in Teen Titans Go, it's the total opposite, in that she doesn't want anything to do with him, and he just throws himself at her. And it's never not funny. But so I did my own research on it, and you know, they did take a lot of the stuff from the original Teen Titans cartoon directly out of the comics. Obviously they clothed her a little bit more.
Yes.
In the cartoon. But you know, the whole thing about, you know, how she learned the English language.
Uh-huh.
That's dead on. That, I mean, she landed and they're all talking to her and she grabs Robin and kisses him. Mm-hmm. And so then they're all kind of, he starts chasing after her and they're like, is it because you want to find out what she's doing or do you want another kiss? And he goes, well, can't,
right.
He goes, well, can't it be both? And so like they had this relationship then, and they even had a wedding, and unfortunately Raven showed up being evil and killed the priest in the middle of the wedding. And so Robin said they try again later, and she said no, because she always thought that he was rushing into the marriage in the first place. Not only that, but she got some sort of prophecy that she would never be happy with Robin, but if she stayed with Robin, he would never survive. But she should have a beautiful future with Nightwing.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm waiting for this beautiful future. That's
sometime today.
That's not coming. I mean, because after, you know, their marriage and their, I guess, engagement or wedding ended, like, she kind of went off in Cloud Cuckoo Land, and, you know, the Arsenal and Red Hood found her on the beach, and she had, sad thing is, she had Nightwing's costume, but she didn't remember who it belonged to. She's like, all I know is that I love this person very much, and I can't wait to see him again. Of course, Red Hood knows exactly who that is, but he doesn't say anything.
Because he's a dick.
Well, yes, he's a very, very angry, very angry man. But, and then I had a hope they would get back together, because there was that wonderful scene in Titans where they just kind of gave in to each other. And yes, it was because their emotions were being manipulated, but then she confronted him and said, can we ever be together again? And he said, no. And so she goes, okay, goodbye, dick, and leaves. It's like, you asshole! God damn it. And now, like, I'm pissed at him now because, you know, so that happened. Barbara officially's like, okay, we're done, after he really blurs the lines between black and white too much. She's like, nope, we're done. And so he's like, oh shit, fine, I guess I don't have her anymore. So he goes off to Bludhaven, and it's like the first girl that gives him the eye, he is ready to mount. I'm like, dude, will you just take it down a notch? You don't have to go for the first girl that, you know, bats her eyes your way. I mean, I know you I know you did that in the spy comic because, well, you were being a spy and you had to, you know, play double agent, but shit, man. And there's a beautiful alien. Like, her whole being is centered on emotions and who loves very deeply. Like, what is your problem? Oh, wait, I know what his problem is. He was raised by Batman.
Yeah, there you go. So I feel we've done a lot of mainstream heroes, and actually, you know what? We'll stick with DC for a minute, because I do actually have another DC one that I didn't think of, and I'm gonna call an audible and do this one because it just turned on me. Because you were talking about, we're talking a lot about the animated, right? Not necessarily so much comics, but the animated universe around it. And one of my favorite shows that my daughter really liked was Justice League, the animated Justice League, and one of my favorite couples.
To be clear, we're talking about Justice League from 2000, not the Justice Leagues from the 1960s and 1970s.
Yes, God, oh God, yes. I'm sorry, I should have made that very clear. Yes, the good Justice Leagues, if you will. So, one of my favorite couples in there was Hawk Girl and Green Lantern.
Oh, my God, I forgot about them.
I loved John and Shira together. They were so... That was another coupling where you had Shara, who's kind of impetuous. She has a temper on her, and she's this very, I can answer all questions with my fist type of person. And then you have Or her mace more often, yeah. She was a, you know, she's a brawler, right? And she's very black and white. Like, this is just how this is. And then you had John, who's more of a little bit more of a cooler head, and he's, you know, he's a Green Lantern, and so he definitely is more of the let's talk this shit out first.
He's the negotiator. And
he's the negotiator, and you had them together, and it was so sweet because they were very reluctant in the beginning. Like, they had this mutual attraction, and then they were kind of reluctant to get together, and then they did, and oh my god, I loved it. And then Hot Girl decided to betray the entire world because she thought she was doing something for the greater good, and John was just never able to forgive her for that. Except in Justice League Unlimited, he does meet his future child, who's sprouting wings. So he knows that he and Hot Girl get together inevitably, right? They're inevitably going to get together, and there is going to be a future with them. It's just not now. And I loved it. I loved it so much. Because it was this, again, it was this very sweet romance between the two of them. And unfortunately, it was one of the few, you know what? It's one of the, in fact, I think it's the only comic book coupling I have where they break up because of a misunderstanding, but at least it made sense. Mm. Right? Like, she just tried to sell out the entire freaking world. So you might be a little sore about that, right?
Well, not only that, but she was married.
I don't think that was what he was angry about. He was angry about, and she was married. That's a really long, complicated story. But I loved them together.
Details.
I thought that was so, it was just such a cute couple them together. And I loved, like, as soon as they got together, I remember watching it with my daughter, and it comes on, and I was just like, oh! And of course my daughter was like, really? I'm like, yes, I like the kissy parts. You, though, and this is one that I'm shocked wasn't higher on your list, because I know that this is another long-standing one for you, Green Arrow and Black Canary.
Yes, another one that's based off of cartoons. I guess I just don't have original thoughts. All my ideas come from cartoons, but I take the cartoons as a way to get into the different comics.
Yes, no, I agree with that entirely.
Just because, you know, I haven't been to a comic book shop in forever, but if I go to Comixology, I'm like, I want to look at different superhero comics. No, you just can't do that.
No.
You need a guide. I mean, and guide
dogs.
You
really do.
And, yeah. So it's thanks to this lovely cartoon called Young Justice, which is probably one of my favorite superhero cartoons that we've had in a very long time. I really like Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, but Young Justice rises above Justice League to me. Because it's the sidekicks, and I always like the sidekicks. And
mm-hmm.
I've had a little special place in my heart for the sidekicks. And Green Arrow is in it. And first of all, he's voiced by Alan Tudyk, so win. And they did portray Green Arrow as the Green Arrow that we all loved and known before Rebirth, and that's this really witty, funny Green Arrow, and that was when I first learned that he and Black Canary were an item. And you know, they didn't really like make it obvious that they were together, but there were lots of hints, and they talked about it, but you know, it wasn't like there's any kissing scenes or anything
right
that. But you know, just some of their interactions, like when they found, what's her name? Miss Martian was pretending to look like Black Canary and was kissing Superboy. And Oliver looking at this footage, and he's like, Dinah? And she's like, I swear to God, that's not me. And then she changes back. And so then Oliver just starts laughing, and she just decks him. Like, that is not funny. But they're like, they are just too cute. And the thing about Black Canary is that she doesn't need him. Like, it's not like she's
right.
Like, you know, clinging on to my man. I mean, it's a genuine attraction, because she's good with him, she's good without
yep.
him. She does not need him, and actually she could probably most likely kick his ass in any fight.
Oh yeah.
And you know, the few interactions between them in the comic that I really really liked, it was very much like that. I mean, they're in the middle of a firefight, and she'll make some comment, and he's like, that is what you would tell me if we were married? And she's like, well, I'd like to tell you to shut up while we're fighting, but I can't do that right now. You know, just little things like that.
Right.
I was just, you know, before Rebirth. They were always just very, very cute. And so it's just a little, even though I'm not as familiar with them, I don't go back years like I do with Rogue and Gambit. They just, it's always had this little soft spot. Like, I just like seeing them together.
They were the best part of the Injustice Gods Among Us comic run. For people who, yeah, Black Canary is pregnant and Superman kills Green Arrow. And it's kind of accidental, but he still kills him. Mm-hmm. And there's this scene later when they're at the funeral, because this is like one of the first, like, oh shit, we just killed one of the superheroes, mm-hmm. Deaths. And there's a scene where they're all at his funeral and everybody leaves except for Black Canary, who's staring down at the tombstone, and Superman shows up and he's like, you know, Dinah, I just want you to talk to me. And she turns around and she's like, you want me to talk to you? And she just lets out that scream mm-hmm. of hers. And it sends Superman back, and blood's coming out of his ears. You know, he, like, charges her, and he grabs her mouth, right? And she's like, are you going to kill me like you did Ollie? And there's just this moment where he backs away, and he's like, I'm so sorry. And then everything after that is just this, like, there's just these constant reminders of their relationship together, and it's just so sweet. And I've always liked Green. In fact, it's one of the biggest complaints. Yes, just one of. The biggest complaints I had with the CW show is how much they really hosed up that entire romance and that entire story.
Well, they keep killing off canaries.
Yeah. Canaries, plural.
Yeah, that's canaries.
Yeah, they do. Oh, no, that's important. Canaries, plural. That is one of the biggest complaints I had about that series, is how they handled Canary in general. So, meh. But one of my favorite comics couples is actually a minor comic coupling, and it's from my Hipster Comics. It's Hank and Pearl from American Vampire, because Pearl is this American vampire who, she's very, very strong. The cool thing about the American vampires is that they're stronger than the European vampires. They're not immune. They're not weak to sunlight. In fact, they can walk out in the sunlight pretty well. America. Well, because they're American, their weakness is gold. So, yeah, there's very these American centric things that they're weak for, but they are a little bit stronger. And, Pearl is just this awesome character, but early in the series, before she becomes a vampire, she's kind of flirting with this guy named Hank, and then after she becomes a vampire, you know, she reveals herself as, hey, I'm a vampire, and he kind of freaks out, right? Because his first thing is, that's bullshit, and the second thing is, you're a monster. But then he suddenly is like, but I really do like you. And they just come together. It's not one of those, you've saved my life, and now we're in love. Like, no, they have this courtship, and they fall in love, and they just become this happy couple. There's no drama. There's none of that bullshit that you see in so many comics. They fall in love, and eventually they come to this part where she's like, well, you know, I'm immortal. I can't have children, and I'm just going to live forever like I am right now. You know, do you want to become a vampire with me? And he's like, no, I don't. Like, I love you very much, and we're just going to live our lives madly in love. And then eventually I'll die, and you'll just keep going on to do amazing things. Because he's like, you're amazing, you're going to do your thing, but I'm good sacrificing, like, a family and everything just to be with you. And they do. They have this fantastic romance up until the point where he ages. And even then, right, they just, it's so sweet. And there's another panel that if Raphael Albuquerque ever comes to Denver Comic Con, there's one, I think I shared it with you, where they're walking up to their house, mm-hmm. and she has her arm through his arm, and she's looking up at him, and it's just this tremendous romantic moment that I'm like, eh. So I love that they're this, like, hey, we're happy. He never has this moment of, I don't like you being a vampire, I don't like you being a hero. They just accept one another, and it's just, it kills me. I love it so much. And then, you, though, fucking X-Men, man. You and X-Men. Slow your roll.
What?
You have the Archangel and Psylocke.
What? What's wrong with them? Look, I have them on my desk. They are
They're
like the.
X-Men.
Yes! See, look, they have
Okay.
Archangel and Psylocke. They're the cutest little couple. Now they live eternally on my desk.
Those were the ones. As we were coming up with our lists, Carrie's sitting there and she's like, "Oh, they're looking at me right in the face." And I was like, "Who?" She's like, "You'll see."
They are
Archangel and
literally
Psylocke.
looking at me. So they got together really weird, and this is actually one that is not from a cartoon. This I read organically through comics because, thanks to the X-Men 90s cartoons when I got into the X-Men comics, and because they didn't have Psylocke in the cartoons because have you seen what she wears? They can't have her. She looks good wearing it. Don't get me wrong, but you just can't put that in a Saturday morning cartoon show.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they left out Archangel. Actually, you know what? They did have him in one of the stupid Apocalypse series.
Yep, he shows up.
Yeah, but then again, it was just like a few episodes, and it's like, yeah, he's one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and blah blah blah, and we got rid of him, and we're moving on. But so my first real experience with Warren, but I was actually reading him in the comics at the time when I saw the episode when he was in it. So, but I really always liked Warren, because I kind of felt bad for him when I learned more about his backstory about how Apocalypse tricked him and removed his wings, and he got these metal wings which are badass, but now his skin is blue, and he was manipulated by Apocalypse to being one of his
Yep.
horsemen, one of his four horsemen, and kill a whole lot of people, and so and he realizes he's never going to have a normal life, and the only way he can go out without being stared at is using an image inducer to make his skin look Caucasian.
Yep.
And I forget why he takes Psylocke out for breakfast, but he does one morning. And that just was just kind of the start of this relationship. And unfortunately, it wasn't too long after it that I parted ways with X-Men because Rogue was being stupid. And so where I am now. But I always liked them. I always would hope that they continued. Although I didn't know, and it's thanks to reading Uncanny X-Men that Archangel kind of went nuts, like back to Apocalypse, and ended up like killing a whole bunch of people. He had two demon children, and they had to be killed, and he's now like his body is there, but his mind is gone. And so
Right.
Psylocke was manipulating him through her mind, and he was the only reason why she was staying with Magneto, was because she was hoping to be able to reach the recesses of Warren's mind and bring him back. And she always would say, "Come back to me." I mean, he was very, very important to her. So, I mean, I know she's probably been with people since, he went nutso, but still, I just thought that they were just so cute because she had so many problems. She had so many psychic problems going on, especially when you get to the whole story with the hand about her
Yep.
splitting her mind in two different bodies and all this stuff. So like, they were kind of two very tortured souls that were manipulated and experimented on who found each other. And I just always thought that was very beautiful and sweet.
Right.
But now, Warren Worthington has the young one that's now in the present day now has wings of fire, and I just don't know how that hasn't fucked up the timeline.
Really? Are you trying to logic the X-Men?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, because the timeline's not messed up. Again, I know I've said this before, because it's not messed up, they all have to go back sometime, and Professor X is going to wipe their minds because that's just what he's going to have to do to keep everything on track. So it's like none of it ever happened. But I don't know how he's going to be like, I went to bed with wings and now I'm up and they're on fire.
Right.
We have questions. And what does that do for him later? Does he ever get, captured by Apocalypse? Because why would he now? Why would Apocalypse offer to take his wings when he's got wings of fire? He doesn't need wings of metal that shoot.
Right.
I forget what those wings shot. It was like these blades of like, they're poisoned blades of doom, essentially. But he didn't need that anymore. He got fire.
Right. Well, actually, so that actually gives us a really good bridge into what we've been reading, because I know at the top of your list is all new X-Men.
Which actually strangely does not even have a Fire Angel in it lately, because we still got the, and I'm kind of like, I probably need to like put this all together with like Extraordinary X-Men and Inhumans versus X-Men, because they all tie in together, and I'm so glad I did get Inhumans versus X-Men as well as Extraordinary X-Men, because there is no way you could read, despite what they say, there is no way you could read Inhumans versus X-Men without reading the other comics, and there is no way you could even read the other comics and understand what the hell's going on unless you read all the others too. Like this
right.
is like do you remember in the 90s the Executioner song?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those, like, you, I mean, I have a few issues with my X-Men, and of course I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck is going on, why Mr. Sinister has captured his people, who Strife is, what is this? And, you know, I never did buy those extra issues, because I think it crossed over with Uncanny X-Men, X-Force, and X-Factor, and I just wasn't going to do that. And you know what, I've never read that whole arc, I have no idea what happened, and I don't care. But, I mean, in this... It is that same thing. So I could have chosen to just read, you know, all new X-Men and Uncanny X-Men and just be like, okay, I don't know what's going on, but whatever, I'll move on. But I think everything is changing. So I kind of felt like I needed to. And I'm so glad I have, because the story behind Inhumans versus X-Men is so good. And the cool thing is, like, at the end of the all new X-Men, you know, Cyclops, young Cyclops, has had some identity issues ever since his older self died, because his older self, the world saw him die as a terrorist. Like, he attacked the Inhumans, attacked their Terrigen Cloud.
Right.
Without even talking to them. Mm-hmm. Just did it. And then, like, you know, threatened war, and then Black Bolt killed him. Well, thanks to Death of X, we know that's not true. He died of the Impox, and Emma Frost, you know, used his image to get all this in play.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but anywhere young Cyclops goes, like, after that happened, I mean, everyone just stares at him, like, they all judge him instantly, which is not fair. He's just a kid. He, you know, that's not him. But like the Inhumans, like, they're all, they want to kill him again. They want to kill him, and then for that, you know, disrupt the timeline so that none of that ever happens. And and even like the other X-Men, like Storm and Old Man Logan, are disgusted by him. He walks in the room and they all stop talking and look right at him. He's like, yeah, and he's like, okay, cool, I'll just go over here.
I'll be over here then.
Yeah, and, you know, it took him a while to kind of get over some of that, that he's like, no, I'm not the terrorist. This is me. I am me. You can't judge me for, you know, that, Scott, because that's not me. And who's to say I'm going to become that? Well, they kind of, so the attack on New Attilan to basically keep the Inhumans busy while Forge goes and destroys the Terrigen Cloud, it was very successful. And as we're coming back from that, Nightwing, Cyclops is having, you know, he's having, you know, some issues with this.
Wrong publisher.
Trying to figure out, you know, what's going, you know, who he is, like, how can he accept this? And suddenly an Inhuman just appears and absorbs into his body. And this Inhuman is Mosaic. And he's able to, he's basically a body leaper, and he just borrows bodies and minds for a little bit and does what he wants. But anyway, he came there. I don't know how he got to the X-Men hideout, but he came there and realized, oh shit, I gotta leave, and jumped into Cyclops' body and had him steal a Blackbird and leave.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, no, he's like, dude, I promise, like, I'll leave you. I'm not gonna hurt you. I just want to get out of here. I will leave your body. It's all gonna be good. We're just gonna borrow you for a minute. So since you're just kind of hanging out in your mind and can't do anything, why don't you, like, watch some of your old memories? And one of the cool things with the old memories is that they showed stuff from, because he also had jumped into Magneto, and some of the memories bled over. He's like, if you're bored with yours, why don't you look at Magneto's? And so there's, like, stuff from the comic issue where Magneto took the adamantium out of Wolverine from the 90s, and all these other horrible things that Magneto has done. And then he gets to this one scene where it's Magneto talking to Emma Frost next to Scott's dead body, the Impox dead body. And so, because Emma apparently told Magneto everything. So now Scott is seeing this. He's like, oh my God, I wasn't a terrorist. She manipulated everybody. This has all been according to her plan. And so one of the best lines in there is when he said, So the death was not, so this whole thing is not an act of a terrorist. It was all based off of one person, a woman with cold dead eyes and blonde hair. I'm like, yeah, sounds about right. So now I'm just like, oh shit, it is on. Because like he's yelling at me. He's like, can I have my body back? He's like, oh yeah, like you'd have your body back, but I didn't tell you this. It kind of takes you about 12 hours to wake up after I inhabit it. So have a good sleep. And then, so his mind, so he just kind of curls up in his mind and he goes, well, I got all the time in the world. He's like, Emma Frost, you have 12 hours to continue living your life. It's like, oh yes.
Her shit.
This is going to be good.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. So I actually, hey, I have joined Team Marvel again. Uh-huh. So,
yeah, but you're on Team Inhuman.
It's true. So I have to give a little bit of a backstory to this. So I had been getting Batgirl and I had been getting Gotham Academy for my daughter because it's really hard to find comics now, that superhero comics that are appropriate for a child less than 13 years old. Because like, and to be fair, I think because you know I had this moment today where I was like, back in my day when I was her age. But the fact is I was probably reading some shit that was like way above my head and way inappropriate for me back then. I just don't remember it really. But it's really hard to find appropriate ones. And Gotham Academy has just gotten so stupid. And after Batgirl's last issue, I was kind of like, no, we're done here. So I actually picked up Ms. Marvel again because my daughter loved Ms. Marvel. And I stopped getting it when they went into Civil War II because no. Good try, Marvel. Good try. But, so I picked it up again post-Civil War, and the series is just so damn good still. G. Willow Wilson is another woman that if she ever came to Denver Comic Con, I would have to resist the urge to just hug her and be like, thank you. So, this issue, last issue, Ms. Marvel, she was confronted by a fellow, what appeared to be a fellow World of Battlecraft player who knew where she lived and knew her name. Which isn't good. So this issue is almost after school specially, but it's done in such a nice way that Kamala shows up at school and she's like, oh my god, like I feel like everybody knows my secret because somebody knows who I am, and she's freaking out about it. And a girl walks into the classroom and everybody stops and looks at her and they all start talking about her. And Kamala's like, oh wait, nobody's talking about me. They're all talking about Clara. Because Clara sent something to her boyfriend over text that she thought was going to be private. And they don't talk about what it is, mm-hmm. right? But there's two people talking and they're like, can you believe she sent that? So as an adult, it's obvious what she sent to him, uh-huh. right? But I'm sure from my daughter, she's going to be like, oh, maybe she said something that she shouldn't have said. And it's this nice moment, this reminder of social media and technology is not as private as you think it is. And so Kamala kind of thinks about that, and then she's in the lunchroom, and she's kind of thinking about how, oh God, like we all have these secrets, and instead of all of our private lives being out on social media now, instead of bringing us together, it's actually making it really bad, because now we know everything about one another. And then Clara walks by her, and she has this moment where she's like, oh, God, poor girl. Nobody wants to sit with her. Everybody's making fun of her. And then she stops, and she's like, but wait, Clara, why don't you come sit with me? And Clara sits down, of course, and she's like, thank you so much. I can't tell you how much this means to me. And it's just this nice reminder that rather than just watching this girl walk away and being like, that sucks, Kamala, not all heroes wear capes moment, right, where she's just like, no, come sit with me. And it's really, it's just this nice, where you're like, I love you, Kamala. So I kind of got like a look when you started talking about that one guy who can inhabit people's body, because so this thing that she's been chasing, you know, she thinks she finds out the person who knows who she is, but she fights this woman who is taunting her, right, and is like, I know who you are, Kamala, and I could tell anybody I want to. And as she starts fighting this woman, the woman's very strong, and she's laughing, and she's like, you can't hurt me. Well, then the police show up, and the second they arrest the woman, all of a sudden she's like, what is going on? How did I get here? And she's very confused, and Kamala's like, oh, shit, there's something weird going on here. And then sure enough, the person calls and is taunting her, and she says something about how she's like, oh, I know that your virus file, I know it's all around town, and he's like, it's not a virus. I am the virus. So one of those moments where I got to the end and I was like, ooh, what? Because she does specifically say, she's like, are you a mutant? Are you inhuman? And he's like, I'm something else. So now I'm like, oh my God. And my daughter read it and she comes running out and she's like, what is it? Like, I don't know. I haven't read the next issue. But it was just this moment of, like, the fact that she was like, yeah, like, things that we share, they're not always private, and you can't always trust people like that. And when she invites the girl to come sit fire, like, such a nice moment.
Well, she talked Claire into dumping her boyfriend because,
right?
Shit.
But it's just this, I like that Ms. Marvel, it's written for all ages, but Wilson clearly remembers that I'm writing about a teenage girl, and this could be appropriate for young kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I want this to be something that everybody can read, which, again, I just want to walk over to him and be like, thank you, hugs. But I'm sure security would escort me out.
One thing I will say about Marvel, and I think it's most likely because they are owned by Disney, there's not a whole lot of naked characters going on.
Yes.
The romance scenes are subtle. They're hinted at, and unless you know about sex, you're most like, I mean, my kid, if I showed him when X-23 and Angel hook up, he wouldn't think anything of it because they're in bed. I mean, they're not naked or anything, but they're in bed together. I know what happened, but he would probably be like, oh, they had a sleepover. I'm like, well, yes.
Right.
They kind of did, yes.
Yeah, there's a scene in which she's talking to her friend after he gets a girlfriend, and she's just like, are you at least being safe? And he's like, yeah, we are. And that's all they say, which, you know, if you're a kid, like, are you not playing with knives? Like, right? Like, what a safe man.
Are you not running with scissors?
Exactly, right? So when she's like, just tell me you're being safe. And he's like, yeah, we are. Oh, okay, right? So, like, kid, like, adults, like, okay. Kids, you get a different message from it, right? So mm-hmm. It's my one Marvel series. And they've mentioned a little bit about Civil War, like a couple issues ago. She was like, well, after all the stuff with Captain Marvel, I was like, don't care. Like, nope. I'm not even going to look up and see what that is, because I don't give a crap.
So, the only thing I really know from Civil War is that Hawkeye killed Hulk. But apparently Hulk asked him to. And Iron Man, Tony Stark is dead. Rhodey is dead. That's about all I really know. I don't think anything else is that important. I know what it's about. It's about Captain Marvel and Iron Man having a tizzy. And Sam Ooh. Wilson wanted nothing to do with it.
And I think Kamala comes down on the side of Iron Man, because there is an issue from earlier, right before the Civil War arc gets started, where she is definitely, like, she's still calling Iron Man before he dies, obviously. And she's asking him for help, and she's rolling with the Avengers, and, you know, there's a little bit of a, oh, I feel really weird about this because I'm still a kid. And so, continuity-wise, like, pre-Civil War, she's like, oh, I'm rolling with the Avengers, and I'm doing these things, and Hydra's here, and then all of a sudden, we're just, like, something else, and she mentions, oh, I had this falling out with Captain Marvel, and, like, don't care.
Right.
So yeah. That was for God's sake, woman, you have another extraordinary X-Men on your list.
No, I combined them. I talked all about all the new X-Men and extraordinary.
Okay, so I thought, but I'm looking at the list and I'm like, wait a minute. Surely no, madam. So, God, actually, you're really heavy on DC this week. Teen Titans, Cyborg, and Nightwing. Let's start with Teen Titans.
Well, I mean, I haven't even read the comics that came out today. Of which I have one Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 DC.
Jeez. I'm so glad I unsubscribed from all my DC comments. Anyways, tell us about the Teen Titans.
Well, Teen Titans... Damian is fucked up, bro.
Really? Batman's son? Batman and Talia's son has a little bit of a problem? Go on.
You know,
tell me more.
You know, the grandson of Ra's al Ghul, you know? So basically the whole purpose behind Teen Titans is that there's a graduation ceremony going on with League of Shadows, League of Assassins, whatever Rajal
Pick
Ghul,
one.
whatever.
You know,
And
Ross's boys and girls.
yeah, and so they basically, the graduation is that they pick targets and supposed to kill them, bring back proof that they killed them, and yay, they graduate. Well, Damien put the Teen Titans together because these are the people that were targeted by this graduating group. And he knows the graduating group because he used to be their leader. And when he left, his cousin took over, and he and his cousin have this really sordid history where she was always trying to challenge him, and he was an arrogant little prick, but he always did beat her every single time. And the last times that he beat her, he took a knife and sliced down her eye, so now she's like blind in one eye, and said now she has the scar to always remind her that he is better than her. So it's no shock that she has picked him as her target, because she just wants to prove to her grandfather that she's the one worthy of his love. She's, the one who is better than Robin. And it's really kind of sickening to watch Roz in this, because it's very obvious he thinks very little of her. And I don't know if it's because she's a girl or because he just sees himself in Damien. I have no idea what it is, but I mean, because he even gave Damien a chance to come back into the fold before this graduation ceremony came out, which is how Damien figured out all this stuff. So anyway, so he hears all these new Teen Titans talking, and they're all bonding. Well, because Beast Boy and Raven and Starfire have known each other for a long time, and they're bonding with a Kid Flash who's fitting in very, very well. And so Robin, he's kind of off by himself because he is the son of Batman. And he listens to them, and so he decides to give himself up to Ra's al Ghul. He's like, I will come back. I will be your grandson. I will, be the heir to the League of Assassins as long as you call off the targets. And he's like, well, I won't. That's between you and your cousin. And so she makes a deal with him that if they're going to fight, and if she kills him, then the graduation goes on. If he kills her, then it's over. And of course, her team is like, well, wait a second, don't we get to decide? This is our graduation, right? And she's like, no, shut up. Like, you listen to me. It's what I want, not what you want. Anyway, so she and Damien fight, and Damien does best her, but he won't kill her. And as a result, as his back is turned, he tells his grandfather to call everybody off. She stabs him in the back with the same knife that he used to slice her eye. And he's dying and bleeding out. And, and Ra's al Ghul, his whole thing is he's like, well, that's disappointing. No, just get rid of him. And they pick him up and they toss him into a cell. By this time, well, now her team, his cousin's team, is they're kind of pissed off at her. So, like, man, she's so selfish. All she thinks about is trying to get his love, and he's never going to treat her that way. And she's not thinking of us, she's thinking of herself. And so they're like, maybe we should have let him, maybe, it would have been better if he stayed, but oh well, he's going to die here alone in the cell anyway. Well, he gets rescued by the Teen Titans as they figure out where he went, and they rescue him. So I'm reading this whole thing. It's like, man, Damien, no wonder you're so fucked up. With
This poor kid, like he never had a chance.
family like that, like a cousin who's always trying to kill you, and your grandfather who's, I don't know what his beef is, but he's got issues. He's clearly got issues.
Well, he's just, I mean, he's him, right? So like he just, hey, look, the strongest, fastest, that's what ends the day, right? So you've got him. You've got Talia, who's and then you have Batman as your dad.
It
Like,
wasn't even there on your 13th birthday.
this kid never had a fucking chance. Like, I feel like on one hand, I'm like, ah, Damien is such a little shithead. On the other hand, I'm like, Jesus. Like, he never had a fucking chance. Like, at least Batman, and the difference between Batman and Damien is that Batman's parents are dead, right? And Alfred raised him, and Alfred loved him, and Alfred was there for him. But the problem that Damien has is that Alfred is there for him, and Alfred loves him, but his parents are alive. They're just leaving him to Alfred.
Well, I mean, Talia did come to him on his
What?
13th birthday and begged him to come back, and be with the family that really loves you, who will be there for your 13th birthday. Like, where's your
Yeah,
father?
but
He's
her
not here.
family is the fucking League of Assassins. Like,
Details, details.
really, really loving people there since, oh, did he get stabbed? Oh, well, that one was a loss.
Yeah,
What?
and his grandfather's gift for his 13th birthday was a dead Robin. Hint, 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 right? Which is what alerted him to the whole graduation rite in the first place. But so I guess in a way his grandfather was warning him, but his grandfather most likely did that just to get Damien to come back to the League of Assassins.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they just, oh, God, everything about them. They're terrible people. And that's your loving family.
Well, the only people I believe that really do love Damien, I mean, I think Batman does love him in his own way.
In his own way.
But the two people that have always been there for Damien, and one just moved out, and I think that's been hard on Damien, very hard, is he's always seen Dick Grayson as his older brother.
Yes.
Always has.
Very much so.
And Dick is the one who trained him. I mean, he actually taught him some of Batman's weaknesses so that, you know, Damien could best him when they were sparring together. And he's even kind of mentioned that, you know, he's like, well, my brother left, you know, because Dick had to go find stuff on his own. And, you know, and poor Damien is left behind again. Like, why wasn't Dick there on his 13th birthday? I know Dick remembers when his birthday is, and it was just him and Alfred. I mean, it was a very sweet moment, especially when Damien says that, you know, strawberry's not my thing, but it looks delicious. And Alfred said, well, I'm sorry, sir. We were all out of blood and sulfur, but maybe I'll think about that for your 14th birthday.
Right. It's perfect. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, that's, it's just, but at the same time, I can understand Damien's like, well, but my brother's not here. My dad's not here. And even though, yes, his dad's off doing Justice League stuff, most likely looking at a goddamn button.
Let's not. I can't handle it.
But is Batman looking for Damien when Damien's gone? Maybe he just figures, oh, kids. It's totally cool for 13-year-old kids to be.
I just went wherever I wanted to go.
I mean, it's just totally cool for 13-year-old kids to be gone for days on end without saying anything.
To be fair, it's Batman, so he's probably like, I did that. Like, come on.
I mean, but Alfred, I mean, I think Alfred might be worried, or Alfred might be is worried and told Batman. He's just like, ah, just let him work it out. He's just probably pouting. I wasn't here on his 13th birthday. Well, yeah, that's a little bit, but
it's kind of a thing, dude.
So yeah, I mean, obviously Damien's not going to die because the Teen Titans just started. And as the last Teen Titans clearly stated, there can't be a Teen Titans without a Robin. Well, the only way so if they kill Damien, what, again? And I guess bring Tim Drake back.
Whatever.
Because Tim is not dead. He is definitely not dead. But
right.
Anyway, so yeah. I mean, Teen Titans. So it's very interesting. I like it better than Titans, and that's just because Titans has centered around the Blue Donger too much. That's what my friend Chris is calling Dr. Manhattan, and I love it too much. It's like, yep,
it's not wrong.
Because exact response was when we were explaining to him about the Watchmen coming in DC. He goes, Batman does not need the Blue Donger. I'm like, you know what? That's a really good way of putting it.
It is. It totally is. Oh my God. So that's your like teen centric series, and we're actually both reading teen centrics because I have Paper Girls.
But you know, I don't think I could let my Gabe read Teen Titans.
Mm-mm. I can't let Susan read Paper Girls because did you ever see a movie in the 80s called The Monster Squad?
Yes.
So I love that movie. I loved it as a kid. I loved it more than Goonies. And I finally sat down and I showed it to Susan, and it's very much a product of its time. But in Monster Squad, they're calling each other fags. And they're using language that we don't use today, right? So I was like, oh, God. Because I forgot about it, right? Because that's just...
I don't remember
it. In the 80s, that's a word that people used because we just didn't know better. And, oh, God. So I'm like, ugh. And it's very much in this series, too, because they're very much the Monster Squad. The girls are the Monster Squad boys. They talk bad, and they talk about sex, and they talk about stuff that, you know, teenage kids talk about because they're cool, right? Like, hey, look, we talk like adults. And so that's kind of, and they do deal with, they have a character named KJ, Cage, they call her. And so... The series, being Brian K. Vaughan, it's very subtle. He has a message, and this is a very feminist series, but he's never really blatant. He never does the thing. We talked about this with the activism podcast last time, where he leans through and says, "I have an opinion." This issue is probably the closest he's gotten to that, where they have a character, she's Jewish. And there is a scene early on in which one of the girls, the white trash girl who really, really talks hard, like she's cool and stuff, she does make like a casual, like, "Oh yeah, because you're a kike." Kidding. Like, she makes it clear, like, "Oh, we're just friendly bantering." But in this, they absolutely have a scene. She has this memory where she's playing field hockey and the other girls start calling her a kike. And she gets, which I hate that word, incidentally. Second only to the N-word, but because it just, when you hear it, you're just like, "Oh my god." But they start calling her this, and then her grandmother appears to her, and her grandmother's like, "Honey, just pity them. You can't do anything about it." And she goes to hug her, and they zoom in on the number on her arm. And then Cage is like, whoa, that is not the number that you had when I was a child. That's wrong. This is a dream." And that's how she realizes, oh, and she wakes up, right? And then the rest of the issue is about all these other things, but that was just so shoehorned in there, right? Like, it's like, oh, okay, yes, Nazis are bad, I got it. It just felt so shoehorned in, and like, it didn't have anything else to do with the rest of the story other than to establish that KJ kind of feels like she's an outsider within the group. But it was really, that was kind of disappointing to me. I was like, oh, come on, man, you're better than this. But the series continues to be very good. They appear to be in the past, like BCE past. And I can't tell if it's going to be for realsies past or if it's going to be altered history past. Well, they established early on, they ask this one girl, I think I mentioned last time we talked about Paper Girls, there's three Erin's. There was modern day Erin, there was 80s Erin, and then there was future Erin.
Oh, right.
So, and I called the 80s Erin Prime Erin because she's the original Erin. And they're talking to future Erin, and they're just like, "Whoa, are you like from an alternate timeline?" And she's like, "There's no such thing as alternate timelines. There's just the time, and then there's the not time, and people are messing with it right now." And we still don't know what's going on because Brian K. Vaughan is one of the best science fiction writers and comics that we have right now. Hmm. It's a great series. That was the one part of the issue that I was like, this is really good, except this feels a little forced. Even though it feels forced, it's still good because you're reading it and you're like, oh my god, that's like, wow, that... You feel bad for Cage, as you're supposed to.
Well, I didn't read it, but it doesn't sound that forced to me.
The only reason it felt forced is that it has literally nothing to do with the series. Before or after. It's not referenced again after that. She just kind of wakes up and she's like, oh, I had a nightmare. Okay. I was like, okay, so that was a little bit of a political commentary forced in there. But even then, like... It wasn't so bad for me. It wasn't like Batgirl or Green Arrow, where you're like, seriously? It was just kind of like, oh, come on, Vaughn, you're better than this. So it was a mild complaint. I still just, oh, love this series. The series remains one of my favorites. But again, they have so many kind of inappropriate comments. Right. I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to wait till she's like at least like 11 or 12 before I let her read it. Which I plan to.
Yeah, I mean, like we were saying about, you know, Marvel, you know, that they're really good about, you know, making stuff kid-friendly. And one of the things that they do is...
Doo-doo!
Yeah, I know. Is they, when there's cussing, which Deadpool does frequently.
And, all the time.
And so does Old Man Logan. And occasionally, mm-hmm. you know, some of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents will just let out a big fuck. Which I don't blame them. In some situations, that's deserving. But... they never have the word.
Right.
They always, you know, symbol it out. But, so, I mean, I probably could let Gabe read some, because he really wants to read Deadpool's comic, Deadpool and the Mercs for Money. Like, mm-hmm. I think that would have to be one that I would have to, like you, vet to see if it would be appropriate. Because, I mean, yes, all that would be cut out, but that's really the least worries least of my worries.
Yeah, if it was just bad language, I wouldn't mind it. It's the fact that they do make a lot of like sexual
Yeah,
comments that I'm like, oh, can't.
that's why I would have to check. But I mean, me with the bad language is that I don't believe Gabe is as mature as Susan. And if I showed Gabe those words, he would just use them. Even if I told him not to, he would just do it anyway. So it's like I have to clean up my mouth around him all the time. Because I mean, he got in trouble at school for saying crap, because I say that I'd use that instead of, saying shit all the time, and apparently he got in trouble. And then I've already had one parent talk to me because I say "butt" in front of my kids, and they're like, "We don't say that word." I was like,
Oh,
"Well,
for God's sake.
it is," So, I mean, he does that stuff. Last thing I need is for him going to school and just being like, "Fuck."
Right.
Yeah, because I mean, I know you're really good with Susan, but Susan's really good to understand. She makes the connection that if she starts saying those words, mommy's gonna take this stuff away, and Gabe doesn't have that connection. And I think it's a difference, I think, with maturity and sad to say, boys and
It is a
girls.
he's a year younger in school than she
Yep.
is, and boys and girls.
Yeah.
Girls figure that kind of shit out a lot quicker.
And boys are just gonna do stuff for the giggles.
Oh yeah.
So.
So and then you have so let's see, continuing down the hot trail of DC, you also have Cyborg,
Yes,
which I know
Cyborg.
you still love the
Oh
series.
yes, I mean Cyborg this last month was so funny. I was laughing so, and it's like a really serious topic, and yet I'm laughing so hard while reading it because he's having to fight. So he's figured out that his father that's been with him is not his father. It's some cybernetic replacement, and he was kind of shutting him down. He wants to take over Variant's body. She's been shut down, and so he can go out on his own. And you kind of find like the whole sad thing out, like how he came to be. And it was once again because Vic's father kind of thinks just for him about himself and what he wants to
Right.
do. But seeing that, I can't feel too sorry for this guy because he's done some pretty heinous things as well. And he shuts down Cyborg. Well, right before he shuts him down, Cyborg's able to like make this hologram of himself, and the hologram goes and finds this hacker named Exie and talks to Exie and coming in. He's like, "You need to break into this building," and Exie never knows that's not even him, like he's not really there until he gets to Cyborg's body, and he's like, "What is this?" And he's like, "Yeah, I need you to turn me back on."
Please.
And of course, but so then the two of them together, like he wants to gets Variant's body because he wants to get her away from Anomaly is his bad guy's name. And the two of them working together was just hysterical because Exie's a hacker and not like, does anything for good. I mean, he does a lot of illegal activities. And so like there's even this once because like Cyborg, he doesn't have a full range of facilities yet, so he makes Exie climb on his back and use his bionic arm to start firing. And he's like, "Well, how do you know I know how to do this?" He's like, "Dude, I've seen you in whatever game this is." And he's like, "Oh yeah, this is like a live video game." It's just kind of hilarious. And then when they escape and they realize they have to go back in, but they're going to do it a different route. And Exie's like, "Dude, can I ask you a personal question since we're having to be friends right now?" He's like, "Sure." He goes, "So like you like that robot chick, right?" And he's like, "Yes." "Which I don't understand why. She tried to kill him." Like that, okay, whatever, man. So he's like, "Yeah, I do." He goes, "So like how do you guys, do it," essentially. And so in the next panel, Cyborg just looks over at him and then just flicks him, and the guy just shoots across, and Cyborg starts walking. He's like, all right, I got it. None of my business. I crossed the line. Cool."
You sent me that panel. That was a funny one.
Yeah. Oh my God. But that's like one thing's great with Cyborg. You have this really deep story, but it still manages to keep some wit about it so that you're not just dragged down in this dark shit. Because I mean, I love a good story. I don't mind going dark, but let's just not make it just like where it depresses the shit out of me to read. I mean, if I
Yeah.
wanted that, I'd be reading Batman right now.
Yeah. It would be funnier if it wasn't.
The last I heard from our friend Larry was that Batman's having like a threesome with Catwoman and Bane or something. I don't know.
Yes, moving on.
Speaking of things that are inappropriate for our kids.
Oh, Jesus, The Wicked and the Divine. Oh, my God. That series is one that is just, like, so sex-heavy. I will, like, never be able to... Oh, that's not true. Like, when she's, like, 15 or 16, I can be like, all right, now you got this one, because it's just crazy. But it just... God, it continues to just go downhill for me because of Persephone. It is the biggest problem that series has right now. Every fucking issue... ever since she turned into Persephone, has the same arc with her. Persephone feels like maybe she should do something because she's part of this pantheon. Not really, but whatever. Feels like she should do something. Persephone gets skulls in her eyes and tries to kill someone or starts a fight with somebody. Persephone has a crisis of conscience and tells people, hey, I'm not good. I'm only going to hurt you. You need to stay away from me. Persephone goes off and either does something terrible or alludes to doing something terrible or threatens to do something terrible. Every single issue, and it's just getting so old. Like, I don't even care anymore, and they're just dragging so slow with this darkness arc. I just, hurry up, we get it already. She's a problem. She's clearly helping the darkness knowingly or unknowingly. The only thing that has going for it this issue is that I think I mentioned one of the things I love is that you take these young people between the ages of, like, 16 and 22, so somewhat selfish, somewhat impetuous, not very bright. Not saying that, like, oh, all 16 to 22-year-olds are stupid, but you kind of are, because you really don't see too far beyond your own wants and needs at those ages. And you've combined them with gods, who are selfish, capricious, really don't give a shit type of people, right? So you have these two horribly selfish personalities in people, and so that's always fun. They have this darkness at the door, and they're like, well, what should we do? Should we fight it? Should we learn more about it, or should we just do nothing? And the majority rule is nothing. Because the gods are kind of like, whatever. We don't give a shit. Right? And I love that it's actually Sekhmet who first is like, we're not doing shit. I don't care. Like, oh, if you know anything about Egyptian mythology, you're like, that's appropriate. And that's one thing, clearly, Kieran Gillen clearly knows a lot about mythology, because most of the gods follow their mythology counterparts. And it's... there's something good going on there. They just need to get the fuck on with Persephone already. Like, stop with the constant same thing. I almost feel like he decided to make Persephone this destroyer. He had her kill Ananke, and now he doesn't know what to do with her.
Which is weird, because Persephone really had no personality in mythology.
So... the thing that they did with her is that they bring her back and she's rebirthed, right? And she's like, oh my god, this is awesome. And then Ananke kills her instantly. And I'm snapping my fingers when I do that, because that's how they kill people, is they snap. And she goes to the underworld. And she exists entirely off of pomegranate, which, if you know anything about the Persephone myth, that makes sense and that fits with there. And then she comes up as this destroyer. And there are some mythological traditions in which Persephone very much is this destroyer personality, right? And because
so you're
she
saying
goes
that jail changed her.
Yes, she came out a changed woman. She did time. And it kind of is, right? Where she is this death, destruction character. There are some of those traditions with that. And they have kind of combined her with her mother a bit too, but it's good. It just, god, they need to pick up the base, wrap up this shit with Persephone. I don't care about her anymore, or at least make her stop following the same pattern every goddamn issue. Like, every single issue ends with her, no, you gotta stay away with me, I'm not good, I will just hurt you, I'm going to do something terrible.
You know, I wonder if that's a reference to her cycle of life. Because she
It
was
could be.
with her mother, half the year, which is like the spring and summer, and then she went back down to Hades, which is why there's fall and winter, because Ceres was all depressed, and so she just let everything die when her daughter wasn't with her. I mean, that kind of maybe, and it's the same cycle every year. She was with her mother, she was with her husband. So, and maybe that's what it's kind of
It is
referring to.
possible. It's possible. I feel like I until something happens that convinces me otherwise, I feel like he had this great idea and he doesn't know where to go with it now. Which is not a good feeling to have right now.
No, that does not a good comic make.
No. And then you have Nightwing.
Yeah, but Nightwing. I'm kind of disappointed in Nightwing because they set up this really great murder mystery things going on in Bloodhaven, and then I predicted who the murderer was 3 issues before they announced it, and I was right. And that's.
Ugh, that sucks.
And I was thinking, like, maybe this is a setup for something bigger, and it kind of is, but not really. And it's just a setup for why he's going to stay in Bloodhaven after all. And, now he's going to go chase after, like, again, the girl that bats her eyes in his direction. And, yeah, I mean, I think I have another issue that came today. I think it's next week. I don't know. I just know I have a shit ton of DC waiting on me. So, I mean, but I'm with one of those, like, the thing is, like, I love the writer for Nightwing, Tim Seeley, because he wrote Grayson, and Grayson was just fantastic. Maybe
I like
that's,
Sealy.
I'm wondering if that's what, some of the issues is, like, I thought the New 52 was okay. It was fine the way it was going. I don't know why they had to redo everything in Rebirth, because I feel like everything's just kind of jacked up, and this is one of them. It's like, because I'm like you, I'm getting tired of Nightwing not figuring out who he is. Is he the Grayson of Gotham? Is he Batman's sidekick? Is he on his own in Bloodhaven? Like, who does he love? He doesn't even know. It's like, oh my god, dude, you are no longer 16. Figure this shit out.
This shit's not cute anymore.
Yeah,
Or
so
endearing.
I mean, I'm not gonna unsubscribe from it because it's Nightwing, and because
Because it's you.
yeah, and because it's and it is Tim Seeley, and I do really, really do enjoy Tim Seeley, and just trying to find the connection with this and Titans as well. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, I feel like a lot of the DC comics have just kind of gone into the realm of like Flash was really. Was really bad last week. I mean, really bad. Like, and I don't mean bad like what we've been talking about with, Green Arrow or Batgirl, but just what? Like, what's going on? It's like they really wanted to bring back the original Rogues Gallery, and they chose the most menial way to do so. Really kind of ridiculous. And the funny thing is, like, our friend Larry, he's like, hey, Titans and Flash are really good this week, so we'll see. I guess to be, I mean, Titans, I'm curious how that could be good because it's been weird. And Flash, like, I guess it couldn't be worse.
That's always a really good review. I couldn't it could just couldn't be worst.
It could just stay the same, but I mean, he said it's good. I'm like, well, I guess if it's good, I guess that means that it's not as bad as it has been. I'll take it at this point. Because I don't know what the fuck's going on. I don't begin to think DC doesn't either.
They don't. They're just at this point, honestly, I feel like DC is just throwing shit at the wall to see what
Oh
sticks.
man, I was just thinking that.
'Cause like Marvel, they're still struggling in spots, but by and large, if you go back, say, 4 or 5 years, they're actually 3 or 4 years. If you go back, like they started to get this idea, right? Like, you know what? Let's start changing things up a bit. And they're not perfect. They have some stuff that's just what the hell is going on here. But by and large, they got these good ideas and they're working for them, right? Marvel is they're doing pretty well. They're keeping it going. DC is just like, let's just throw everything. And DC really shat the bed for me years ago, and I have major trust issues with them. I really liked Batwoman when Batwoman first came out. They had this idea, what if we create a character who is in the Bat family, She's a woman. She's a lesbian. And let's create this character. And so it's different from Batgirl because she's very much a woman, right? There's none of that, oh, I was a teenager, but now I'm kind of a young adult. Like, no, she's a woman. And, but when they decided that they couldn't show her get married to her longtime girlfriend who's been with her since the beginning of the series, and they were like, whoa, no, we'll have a lesbian character, but let's not get too crazy here. Like, there's still... DC wants to, like, they want to get a new audience in, but they don't really know how to. And I felt like that was a metaphor for DC. Like, you guys, you want something, but you're just not sure how to go about it. And that's where they shat the bed for me.
Yeah, the comic, they canceled it eventually, right?
I think so, yes.
But she is mentioned in these comics. Like when Nightwing had the big crossover with Batman and whatever the fuck was going with the monsters, and asking Larry, like, who's this guy? And he's like, I think it's going to be the new Robin. And I'm like, okay, I'm not listening anymore. And
right.
She was mentioned in that, so I think she was going to be a part of it. So I don't know if she's getting her own comic, or they just, you know, like, hey, we still do have Batwoman hanging out here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was totally unintentional, but I will take it. My problem with Batwoman is not that she's a lesbian character. It was just, I feel like the Bat family is so big and crazy as it is, and it just keeps getting bigger. And at the same time, I understand that they can't just create this brand new character for a new comic series, because that's hard to get those started and rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't turn a character gay, because then that's pandering.
Right.
I don't know what I want them to do. Maybe, I don't know, just find a different comic book series to, different DC family to do that with. This is, I just personally feel like the Bat family is so convoluted.
To say the least.
And just seeing what's going on now, like, again, like I said, like, who are these two guys? And Larry said, oh, I think one of them's going to become the new Robin. I'm like, but they have a Robin, and his name is Damian. Does he not remember his son? He's like, yeah, but Damian's gonna do the Teen Titans, so he needs his own Robin. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's, they don't know what they're doing. I don't feel like anybody is driving that ship. And you know what it also could be? It could be a series of too many cooks in the kitchen.
Could be.
I don't know what's going on with them, but no, I don't feel like they know what they're doing. And then, so my final series that I have is East of West, which, it's both good and it's frustrating me. So it's good because I think I mentioned that one of the things I like about East of West is that it is very, very political, but not, it doesn't stoop so low as to do the trite, oh, conservatives versus liberals or American politics in general. It's more of human politics.
Okay.
And it just, it works so well on so many levels. And this issue, so last year before it went on hiatus, they finally had Death reunited with Babylon, right? And it was so wonderful. It was so great. But, like, there's all these questions because Babylon has his balloon with him, and his balloon, it's questionable. It's not trustworthy. And now that he's reunited with Death, I'm not sure how that's going to work out. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure because we don't fucking know. We've spent the last two issues talking about, like, the people. Because the House of Cards that is the Chosen is just falling. And it is delightful. There's a character in there who, her demise is just, it's falling down around her, and I'm like, yes! Can't stand you! And not like, oh, this, I don't like reading this character, like, she's just such a good villain, you're like, oh, I hate you every time she talks, so I'm really happy that bad things are happening for her. It's like the player haters ball, I hope bad things happen to you and only you.
That sounds like exactly the reaction I had when Scott found out about Emma Frost's big secret. It's just like, oh, yes, things are going to happen. It's going to be so good.
Exactly. Oh, yes. And, oh, man. One of the things that I love about Jonathan Hickman is that his dialogue is always so sharp. Mm-hmm. And there's the end sequence of this issue is when there's people, they're on this train, and they're basically doing a suicide run to crash into a building, and this girl, she grabs one of the guys, the people who took the train hostage, or hijacked it. That was the word I was looking for. Hijacked it. This girl who hijacked it, she's talking to one of the guys, one of the guards for the train, and she grabs him, and she's like, "Are you a romantic?" And he's like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And she's like, "Well, romantics are the only one who can get this kind of stuff done." And she just kisses him full on right as you see them heading towards this building. And I was like, "Ah, I love this! Read this series!" And I put this in my review, and it's the truth, that I think if I were to ever meet Jonathan Hickman, my first question would be, why is this series so good? But whenever the horsemen aren't in it, like, I just want them to get back to the horsemen. Because Death was such a centric character through the first portion of it, and now that he's reunited with Babylon, we haven't really seen anything. And Conquest is my favorite horseman, so whenever Conquest isn't in there, I'm like, I just want to see Conquest again. Even though, you know, they're now teenagers, and they're just doing terrible, terrible things, as you would expect the horsemen to do. And I just love it still. I cannot recommend, like, East of West was on sale. I think you shared it either on Facebook or Twitter. Like, I am so head over heels, like, when it goes on sale, I'm like, everybody buy this book! Love it. So, but it's continuing to be good, which is good, especially given how kind of, like, I'm getting with East of West.
You mean Wicked and Divine?
Wicked and Divine.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm good on East of West. I'm kind of with the Wicked and the Divine. It needs to figure its shit out here soon. But I think that is all we have for this week's podcast.
Yeah, so maybe, wow. Maybe I'm glad I didn't read any comics this week. Otherwise, I'd probably still be going. Because, like, again, I said I had eight comics coming today. So
that is insane.
Yeah, my wallet not happy, but... And the problem is, like, some of my DC comics come twice a month. So that's part of the problem. I think it's just Nightwing and Flash. But still, that adds up over time.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Yeah, I'm glad that my stuff's... But, you know, I have... well, shit. Rat Queens is coming out in March. Praise be. Yes, Queen. And what else? There's that series Rose coming out. There's another new series coming out. The Old Guard, I think it's called. There's all these new Image series that I'm like, I gotta read this. I gotta read this. I gotta read this. And so my wallet's soon going to be very unhappy with me as well. It ain't easy. Yo, this is what we do for our listeners and our readers because we love you and we have problems.
Who are we kidding? We do this for ourselves and
it's
we,
the truth.
We
it's...
use this as an excuse just to talk about our problems.
Yeah, that's valid.
Yep.
Damn it.
But I have fun.
Why do you gotta go and put us on Front Street like that? We do have fun doing it.
Yes.
And we will be meeting again soon. I don't know if we even know what our podcast topic will be then, but it's going to be something amazing.
Yeah, so, you know what? I have no idea what it is going to be, but I'm sure
actually, I think our list is favorite characters.
We need to spread that out a bit, since we just did favorite couples, because they're going to kind of like overlap, so...
A bit. Yeah, that's true. I mean, we'll figure something out.
We got 2 weeks to come up with another topic.
We do. So
we can do that. But in the meantime, we do thank you all for tuning in and listening to us. You can catch our podcast and never have to miss one. But if you subscribe to us on both on iTunes, not both. Don't do both. That's silly. Do it on either iTunes or Google Play.
I mean, you can if you want.
Can,
but
really, yeah, but... I guess you really need us on all your devices. There you go. why wouldn't you, to be honest? But so we have that. And, of course, like, we are coming out with so many comic reviews. Everyone, please go read Jen's interview with Meredith Finch, the author for the upcoming Femme Fantasy Rose.
Yes, and really... thank you very much to Meredith Finch for taking the time to answer our questions. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's an amazing interview. Like, if I ever see her, I'm probably going to, like, attach myself to her leg and never let go.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
That'll be another person that I'll be like, can I, like, awkward air hug you and not touch you? Because you're amazing. I'm so excited for that series. But, yeah, it's a great interview. Check it out, won't you?
Yes, I'll be sure to put a link on the actual post for this in case it's not no longer on the front page of the site. It may not be with all our reviews that have come out, because Jen actually
missed 8 issues there.
Well, Jen did 3 today, and I did a news post because there's going to be a comic series for Dawn of War 3.
Yay!
Yeah, so I did a news post announcing that, showing some of the variant covers that you can pre-order whenever you want to pre-order your copy through Titan Comics. And I got my reviews coming up, so I will post that link. But regardless, so, you know, we do news, we do reviews, we have our own comic thoughts, we have a few columns. So please come and see what we talk about. I mean, I'm kind of Miss Mainstream and Jen's Miss Hipster, but we have fun doing it.
We do. Darn it. Damn it.
So, and we're also on Twitter at Yell About Comics, and Jen is at Jen Bozier, and I am at Crunchy Chocobo, and we're also on Facebook. You can find us at Yelling About Comics. And until then, we're going to say good night, good luck, because there's probably zombies out there, and we will catch you in 2 weeks.
Peace!